Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Lemonada.
Hurry hard, gotta go.
We're gonna play a hack weight takeout.
Gotta get this rock to the house, sweep it.
Apollo, when was the last time you heard these words uttered together in a sentence?
Curling in the Olympics.
Go ahead. Let it curl.
And before that?
Curling in the Olympics.
Same. If you've never visited one of the 197 curling clubs currently in the U.S., it's unlikely you'd ever hear these phrases outside of the Winter Games. Here's a quick translation.
You know, we use some interesting words like hurry and hard, which just mean that, like, sweep the room fast or put a lot of pressure on it.
That's John Schuster, who is headed to his fifth Winter Olympics and who helped win Team USA's first curling gold medal at the last one. Like many curlers, John joined the sport because he knew someone who knew about it.
My dad curled in a curling league, so I kind of knew what it was. And I think I got to a point where I just really wanted to try it. And when I was 12 or 13 years old, finally went down to the curling club during one of the junior nights, which was a Sunday, and tried it and was pretty much hooked ever since.
For John, curling is chess on ice, a light in his life that's challenging, stimulating, and social. But recently, he's noticed something. John never really thought about curling culture as a problem until 2020, when tens of millions of people in the U.S. took to the streets and social media to protest racial injustice. That's when USA Curling formed a committee and asked a question. Why is this sport so white?
I have always viewed curling as one of the most inclusive places, and you know, and I think being part of this committee has made me see that maybe we aren't the most inclusive.
Go! All the way! Go, starter! Go! Keep going! Keep
going! Hi, I'm NBCLX storyteller Ngozi Okelodo, and I'm joined by my co-host, Apollo Ono. He's Team USA's most decorated Winter Olympian, a best-selling author, and even a Dancing with the Stars champion.
Thank you, Ngozi. This is my new favorite Olympian, where we introduce you to some of the most inspiring members of Team USA, not just because of how they're dominating the competition, but because of what they're doing when the cameras are off.
If you've never seen a curling match, here's a primer. Two teams take turns getting 44-pound granite stones across a strip of ice. The team who gets its stones closest to the center of the house, which resembles a bullseye, wins. They do this with a skip or a team captain, calling the shots and curlers brushing the ice in front of the stone to control how the stone moves or curls. Now that you know how the sport works, let's take a look at its origins. To understand why curling is so white, we have to look at its history. The sport was first played in the 1500s on frozen ponds and lochs in Scotland, and has since taken hold in the UK and wherever Scots settled, mainly Canada, Sweden, Switzerland, and Norway. In fact, these five teams have won over 80% of all Olympic medals in the sport. But within the US, the spread of curling has been pretty slow.
I think just how the sport has grown internationally has kind of limited it.
This is Monica Walker, a Team USA curler from the Boston area.
So curling has come over from Scotland to Canada and the US in the form of mostly country clubs. So it's often a sport that's paired with golf or tennis. And they kind of combine well because there's like the summer aspect of golf and then the winter aspect of curling. From what I know about U.S. country club culture is that it tends to be very like white male, upper class. And I think that's really limiting to how the sport is presented to the general population.
Just one out of 37 curlers on Team USA in 2020 was a person of color, and every coach was white. Many Winter Olympic sports look pretty similar. Over 94% of U.S. hockey players are white, as are 96% of skiers and snowboarders.
How many faces of color are maybe like trans curlers or, you know, queer curlers have you sort of come in contact as you've been competing in the sport?
Not as many as I would like. In fact, I was even kind of looking around at the last nationals that we had back in May, and just kind of looking around at everybody that was there, and there was nobody really of color there at all. And that's a huge red flag to me. And I want to talk about that, and I want to know why, and I want it to be different in the future.
In 2010, an unexpected face brought curling to the mainstream.
I was introduced to curling back when I was in San Francisco. One of the beat writers there in the locker room came up to me. She's like, "Hey, Vern, I want you to come out and try curling." At the time, I didn't know anything about it. I'm like, "Curling, what is that?"
This is Vernon Davis, a former NFL player and Super Bowl champion who is also quite passionate about curling. So much so that he was named honorary captain of the men's U.S. Olympic curling team for the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver. He reprised his role in Sochi at the 2014 Winter Olympics and in Pyeongchang at the 2018 Winter Olympics.
You just watch that stone and it just starts to spin, and it's going to the destination that you wanted to go to. It's just like a joy when it actually gets there.
Vernon walked around Sochi in a blue USA curling jacket with V. Davis embroidered on the back. The V kept people from confusing him for U.S. speed skater Shawnee Davis, who in 2006 became the first Black athlete in history to win an individual gold medal at a Winter Games. But Davis, a 6'3", 250-pound African-American man, did not have to worry about getting confused for any of the curlers, because few people in the sport look like him.
I don't feel like it's a welcoming sport because because a lot of people don't understand it. They don't even know what it means, especially African-American culture. They've never even seen it.
They've never seen curling, that is, until they see Vernon curl.
What is that called? Is that a puck?
It's a stone.
And what are these called, Vernon?
That's the broom for sweeping.
That's Vernon teaching comedian Arsenio Hall how to curl on the Arsenio Hall Show in 2014. Teach me how to curl. And that's Vernon with performer Todrick Hall and Hall of Fame running back LaDainian Tomlinson in a music video released ahead of the 2018 Winter Olympics.
It brings awareness. My involvement brings awareness to the sport. So it's pretty cool. But I think if we can continue to get it out there, I think everyone will continue to familiarize themselves with the game.
And it's working.
I latched onto the sport after the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. I kind of became fascinated, then became enamored, and then became obsessed.
Deb Martin, a curler from New Jersey, says that watching Vernon Davis in the stands at the Olympics left a vivid impression on her because he was an unexpected ambassador, and not just because he was a football player.
I mean, I lived 15 minutes from the only dedicated curling club in New Jersey for 15 years and didn't know it was there. I definitely felt that I was an outlier. I should mention that when I joined, I also joined with my wife. Her name is Charlotte, and we're both women of color, 11 years in the sport, and you know, we're still one of very few people of color.
In March, USA Curling launched an initiative called Icebreakers to bring more BIPOC athletes into curling at the local level. Deb was tapped to co-create the program in 2020.
And the goal is to use things that are already in place and not to reinvent the wheel. So simply put, we have things called Learn to Curls or curling experiences or open houses that you'll see even as the Olympics ramp up. You'll see a lot more of that activity because the curiosity around curling peaks with every Olympic cycle. And so we're really just trying to bolt on a more intentional recruitment effort onto the things that clubs are already doing. trying to get people to sort of pull back and zoom out and look at the fact that there are already organizations that are founded around, you know, athletics and, you know, people of color, like Black Girls Run or Black Men Run. Black people or people of color are kind of everywhere. All you really have to do is make the connection.
Importantly, the onus shouldn't be on people of color to make that connection. That commitment is what united a small group of international curlers in 2020, led by Monica, who we heard from earlier.
At the time, Monica was working for a curling supplies company, which responded to the Black Lives Matter movement by bringing on a diversity, equity, and inclusion mentor named Dr. Rich Norman. Norman, who's Black, had recently published his dissertation on curling culture in his home country of Canada.
So, you know, not that I love this terminology, but I'll put it in quotes. Colorblindness is one thing that we find a lot in sports that are predominantly, I will say, white, or at least represent the dominant culture within nations. And so that not seeing color idea is actually quite detrimental when you think about racialized persons wanting to feel comfortable in these spaces. You can't just always say, here's curling. Curling's great. Come and curl, because it has no meaning to, you know, some communities. And instead, what does it look like to connect with other people on their own terms and find out what their needs are and try to, you know, form relationships first before you make that big ask?
Norman wanted to explore curling in part because it's seen as so core to the Canadian national identity. He was interested in the question of who gets left out of that image.
Sort of through happenstance, my dissertation has been, you know, read by people in the curling community to understand a little bit more about what are the issues and what are the challenges within the sport.
One of those people was Sarah Carlson, a white Swedish curler who had actually connected with Norman for the first time about 10 years ago, when Norman was invited to his first curling event.
Reading his dissertation made it very clear that, wow, we're not doing enough and we're not doing the right things.
In our conversations, we started to realize that lots of other people are doing the same kinds of, or grappling with the same issues, and, you know, maybe have resources which would be useful to bring together.
And that's when Norman connected Carlson with Monica.
Yeah, I think it was over Facebook Messenger because, you know, there's a time difference between us, and or maybe it was over Zoom, I can't remember, but just both kind of like, well, nobody's doing anything about this, like, and now is the time, and we're not going to let this chance like slip away to change our sport.
When we started talking, you like, for me, like, the first biggest lesson was that, okay, this is not about us going out and doing different like projects. This is about us looking at how we need to change like the structures of how we do curling.
So they decided to email every member association of the World Curling Federation, and about 20 nations joined the first virtual meeting of what is now known as the Global Initiative for DEI in Curling.
They formed a working group. They fielded messages on social media, wrote a regular newsletter, and hosted educational webinars and workshops. For a panel on emerging curling nations, Monica contacted a curler for Team Mexico, an organizer with the Latinx community in San Francisco.
Hi, my name is Adriana Camarena. Once I started playing with Team Mexico, you know, we needed to represent ourselves as curlers in Spanish. And so I learned that it was hard actually to explain certain terminology. And so I gathered all the curling terminology I could find online, and I made a translation.
It's difficult to embrace a sport when you don't have the vocabulary to talk about it. So she's working with the Southern California Curling Club on outreach to local Mexican and BIPOC populations.
As of late, I've been contacting all the Latinx curlers I know to be able to visualize and make ourselves available to other Latinx people. I think is going to be one of the first outreach efforts. We curlers tend to think of ourselves as very sociable, welcoming people, but it took this type of effort to elevate the discussion to question ourselves. Are we really that welcoming? Why is it that we only have a handful of curlers, of whether they're African-American or Filipino or Asian or Black in our curling clubs? we need people like Monica to take those steps and model and show how we, even if it's in a bumbling way, how we can start to make progress.
That has kind of been the most important thing for me, is making sure I put it out there that I can be seen as and counted on as being an ally.
This is John Schuster again. Through his recent work with USA Curling's DEI committee, he's learned that curling leagues may have felt inclusive to him as a white cis heterosexual man, but not to others. In a virtual panel hosted by the Global Initiative, Schuster reflected on his experience, hearing from a transgender powerlifter who he used to compete with in the junior men's league. Here's a clip.
And some of the things that she mentioned to us about, you know, even the language that was used around the curling community and in the junior men's area and around curling clubs, and was not a place where she felt was going to be accepting, and she actually gave up the sport. And it was in that vulnerable place that she was, where she gave up the sport she loved, and I could think of how that had to feel, because I obviously love curling and as much as she does. And I hope that nobody ever has to make that decision because of a group that I'm in or part of ever again.
This past fall, USA Curling adopted a new policy that will no longer require transgender and non-binary athletes to verify their gender identity or undergo specific medical treatments. The policy was drafted by members and allies of the LGBTQ plus community and is meant to guide curling clubs across the nation.
And there are definitely things that, you know, I've eliminated from my vocabulary. You know, I'm going to work very hard as, you know, whether it be a public figure or a parent, to make sure that that isn't something that is seen as normal or okay in the world that, you know, my kids are growing up in. I hope that we get pretty soon to the day where every single person that walks into a curling club feels like it's a comfortable place that they want to spend time, like most of us curlers feel about our curling clubs.
Here's Deb Martin again.
It's just like, the end of the day, this program is a success if I'm no longer unique and special because of like how I look or my background, but maybe because of how I curl instead. I don't think it necessarily means that every club in the USA suddenly has Black people in it. What I feel like is the marker of success is that if you live in a community or your club sits in a community that is surrounded by different populations, your club is an accurate representation of the neighbors that are nearby. Ask yourself the question, if you live in this neighborhood, how is it that you don't know your neighbors and why don't they know you?
Not one person in a community has the answers, but together we can get to those answers. So giving people space and asking, how do you want to do this? No, it's part of the work. With compassion and kindness and respect, and always, as we say in curling, in the spirit of curling, giving the other person the benefit of the doubt, that they're trying their best, that if they made a mistake, that they will try to correct it, and they will, and as if you make a mistake, it is on you to make that correction. We don't have referees on the ice all the time, so that is why curling kind of demands that we do give the other person the benefit of the doubt.
So in the spirit of curling, let's go stack the brooms.
What? Ah, I'm reading from Adriana Camarena's glossary now. You mean socialize after a game, or in our case, podcast.
Exactly. Go back to the My New Favorite Olympian feed right now to check out previous episodes. While you're there, tap the subscribe button to get automatic downloads of My New Favorite Olympian for free. Stay tuned for a preview of next week's episode of My New Favorite Olympian.
And I've heard somebody on the ice, not to me, to somebody I was playing with, say like, throw your tomahawk or something. I was like, what? I was like, get out of here with that.
When Abby Rock looked around and realized she was one of the few Indigenous athletes representing Team USA, she wanted to do something about it.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, is just making sure that everybody knows that there's a place in the sport for them and that they shouldn't be intimidated or not confident. Be like, I'm just like, no, you belong on the ice. Even if they don't think you're good enough to play with them, show them. Just plain and simple. I've thought about this before, and I've had other people say it to me, and people being like, you would be one of the only Indigenous people probably at the Olympics, Abby. Like, it's a big deal to make it that far, and especially the only Indigenous person on our roster. I think just thinking about that is very surreal, but also makes you very grateful. For me, hockey was so accessible and so part of my life that it never was truly a challenge for me to just fall in love with it and be playing it, where so many kids aren't as lucky.
My New Favorite Olympian was produced by NBCLX. Apollo Ono and I and Guzzi Akelito were your hosts. Megan McDonough wrote, produced, and edited this episode. Seth Rubenreuth and Fernando Hurtado were supervising producers. Jeremy Berg and Matt Goldberg served as executive producers. Tony Pierce was the motion graphics designer with support from Michael Katowski. Stephen Morello, Nina Lin, and Mackenzie Baim served as directors of photography. Stephen Dawson was the media manager and quality control editor.
This broadcast is presented by the authority of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form without the express written consent of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee.